So I took the example from Eric, and I thought I could prepare some slides as a summary. So this is also somehow in Norwegian because I worked on this with my colleagues in my other course. So anyway, it's maybe somehow easier for you. So, of course, there is this thing about the society that everything is being connected in a progressive way, and then there are some very good opportunities, but also many challenges, and there is an increasing level of risk. And that's how then we go on to define the cybersecurity principle. So we have this improved definition from the paper that I already introduced in the first lecture on cybersecurity. Then we also talked about the famous CIA triad, which is confidentiality, integrity, and availability, which has also been the industry standard since many years now. And in this triangle, you should be able to define and also distinguish between all these terms. So that's why we have also a slide for this here, where this is written in Norwegian, and we try to define the term confidentiality and when is an information considered confidential. What are the main goals of confidentiality, and what do we achieve by having a confidential set of data or visual information? This is also related to privacy, and then also we know that now there are almost daily news when it comes to the GDPR regulation. Then we move on to the integrity part. So integrity is the other principle from the CIA triad, and then we know that an information set of data or information has integrity whenever it's complete or considered as not corrupt. And this is crucial in all information systems. We all want to have the latest data, the most accurate data, because everything then is translated into decision making, and we wouldn't allow ourselves to make bad decisions because of the data that we have. And then, if you remember, we had this assignment about file hashing, which is somehow related to file integrity and information integrity. But instead of file hashing, there are also other ways how to understand if a file has been corrupt or not, or someone else has had access into it and has maybe changed some values. Then we move on to the other principle, which is availability. And availability is the one that is able to give the authorized users access to information. And then this can also be related to other processes, like having this goal of the famous five nines, which means that a system is considered highly effective and, of course, highly available whenever it's available like 99.999% of the time, which is like being unavailable or non-functional only 5 minutes per year. And that's like the highest level of availability. And this is like what should we understand about the availability principle. And then we go on to a broader term, which is included into the cybersecurity cube. We have already talked about this. This is, or else known as the McCumber's cube. It's trying to frame the cybersecurity, let's say, environment by having three dimensions, which are related to the stage of data or information involved, which can be like storage, can be processing or in transmission. Also related to the CIA triad, which can be like either confidentiality, integrity, or availability. And then something about the cyber security safeguards and measures, which then might be translated into either policy, education, or awareness, and technology. The McCumbers group is usually highly relevant to the organizations when it comes to having or finding the right approach to a certain issue and trying to find the best solution to this of when it's always related to cybersecurity. And then we have also talked about the cybersecurity culture or the security culture in general, and there were some surveys and some data, and then there were also these definitions. Then moving on to another topic, we started talking about the different threats and vulnerabilities in the second chapter. We have the definitions from ISO standard 27002, and by this we know that a threat is a potential cause of an incident that may occur to an asset organization. And then we can also define the asset, which is anything that is valuable to the organization. We can also identify an incident, which is a single or a series or of unwanted or unexpected events. And then the event is what happens that like has the major impact on the system or specific applications or information involved. And then we talked about the different types of attackers. We started talking about the script kiddies, which are somehow usually known as amateurs, so they have no to low level of skills, so no skills at all or low level. Then usually they do their stuff by just trying to see whatever is there existing on the web, and then trying to use this low cost solutions to reach their goals. But then we also have the major category, which is like the hackers, and then we have the white hackers, black hat hackers, and also the gray hats, which are somewhere in the middle. And the main difference is how they, what they do with the information they get from breaching a system or something like that. And the white hats usually report it to the authorities. The black hats use it for personal benefits. And then the gray hats are somewhere in the middle. Sometimes some of these groups can report it to the authorities, and then if this is not like heard enough, they maybe can promote it further or can use it for their own benefits. Then we also have the organized groups, which are like in the highest level of this threat pyramid. So we have the cyber criminals, which are like organized groups of criminals, cyber criminals, which usually organize much of the activity going on there. And then we have the hacktivists or the ideological cyber criminals. We have the state-sponsored attackers, and we also have the so-called cyber terrorists. Then we move on to the different types of threats, where we have, of course, external and internal threats. If we would like to compare between them, we would say that, of course, there is a large amount of possible external threats, starting from the large amount of people that have access on the internet, as we already mentioned in the lecture. But then organizations are more and more focusing on the internal threats, because it seems that most of the attacks, most of the origins, most of the cases, the origin of the attack is from the inside. So there should be something about this. And then it was also mentioned in the lecture and here that usually internal threats are the ones making the most damage, because whenever you have internal access, then you have direct access into all facilities and devices. You usually will have knowledge of the networks that are part of the system. And then you can also have access to different levels of users, so that you can maybe use this to perform or to have a larger impact. And then this is the part where we also talked about vulnerabilities. And it's usually categorized into software or hardware vulnerabilities, and that can be used to attack or to target the cybersecurity principles by having different types of impacts. So in terms of hardware or software, usually when we talk about hardware vulnerabilities, we always have in mind the bugs in the, or the flaws in the hardware design part, such as the chips or maybe something else. And then on the software vulnerabilities, there are a lot of them, and they are more researched and followed, because it consists of the most type of vulnerabilities thing. So in terms of software vulnerabilities, we have talked about buffer overflow, and you had also something Eric talked something about that. We talked also about the invalid input, which can be a way how to compromise and then maybe get access into a certain system. We have already talked about the race condition and when it can be used and what can be the aftermath from that. We talked about different weaknesses in the security practices, which usually is related to the level of detail or the level of security when it comes to building your own software and modules, and then problems with access control. And then how can we prevent, or how can we protect from this part? Usually this is always somehow avoided or mitigated by having physical security or maybe malware protection, and that's where we start talking about malware. So malware or malicious software are the software that are specifically designed to perform malicious or unwanted actions, and we try to categorize them into two major groups that are all the malware that are used to infiltrate or to get into a system, and then all the malware that are used after this, and what can be done with different types of malware after this part. So we have the viruses, the worms, and the trojans as a different malware used in the beginning, in the first phase. And then we have talked about them. So we have, for example, we talked about the I Love You historical virus, which has been around 20 years ago and has had a huge impact in the time. We talked about worms, which can replicate and are known for usually slowing down networks. And we talked about Morris worm, developed from this postgraduate researcher. And then we talked about the trojans, which are usually deployed by having these typically games shared in different storage devices. And then the other types, like the ones that are usually targeting integrity, like logic bombs, backdoors, rootkits. And then we also talked about bots and the denial of service attacks, and then the distributed denial of service attacks, which are related to this kind of malware. And then we also mentioned spyware, adware, scareware, which were designed to get most of information, to collect most of information from the system they are part of, and then use it for other more dangerous attacks. And then also ransomware. We also mentioned several attacks that might be resulting into getting sensitive information, as in passwords, like the smishing attacks, which is like a category of phishing. Then farming or whaling, all of these are different attacks that usually are targeting individuals or organizations in terms of getting their individual data and using them then to get access into more information. Then we might also have attacks on networks by using the sniffing method, spoofing, or man-in-the-middle or man-in-the-mobile attacks. And this is like usually all the typical attacks that we have talked about. Speaking of organizations, we had this definition of the organizations. We talked about what is an organization, both from the technical and from the behavioral side. And then we also had distinguishing between them. And then we also talked about the organizational culture as an important feature of the organization. We talked about the organizational data, which can be grouped into the traditional data related to the traditional systems, the legacy systems, HR, financial, etc. And then also the Internet of Things and the big data, which is like something new, the actual trend. And there are many companies who are getting into this because they are having more and more data collected from their customers, from their partners, from their suppliers, and then they need this data to predict and to see what's the next decision. Then when it comes to protecting the organization, it's usually a bit difficult to do this as always, but then there are different means anyway. And the usual appliances that are used there are like not single ones. The best approach would be to have a combination of different appliances and then having a sort of a system built in order to have the best result from this solution. So there are routers, firewalls, intrusion prevention systems, VPNs, etc. And we had also talked about firewalls, for example, where we tried to distinguish between the different types of firewalls that might be used, and usually they are like divided into host-based or network-based firewalls. We also talked about the cyber kill chain, which is something that was developed from Lockheed Martin in terms of trying to describe and to predict what would be the stage of an attack in any time, and where would the attackers be working on a certain moment. And so this was like named as cyber kill chain. It had these different phases. It started with reconnaissance, and it ended with the action, which is like whenever you have these malware after the propagation that you can use, and then you can benefit from whatever they can access. And then you have also the stages here. So you start gathering information, reconnaissance, trying to create the exploits and the malicious software, then sending them, installing the other backdoors or additional malware, trying to control them, trying to control the system affected by having this malware installed there, and then putting these system into action by using them as like units of potential DDoS attacks or anything else. Then when we talk about this, we also had some questions that the organization needs to follow and to correctly review whenever they are trying to analyze this process. In this part, we also mentioned something about the behavioral approach, where we said that there is an increasing number of organizations that are starting to deal with this approach, and in order for this to be successfully applied, then some organizations have already created these, let's say, events where they have these hack me event or something like that, hack the system event, and they have these honeypots, and they try to understand what would the average hacker do, what would he target, and how would he gain access into a certain system, and then use this information to identify the weakest parts of their assets and then try to maybe invest or improve the level of their security. And then there is also this other learning framework which we talked about, which is about four main principles that are already in place, and you might also find similar approaches to this one when it comes to building the organizational, the security at the organizational level. So an organization might either choose to respond to the attack, to detect, to prevent or predict, and that's when it comes to different stages depending on the level of skills the company staff has, or depending on the level of information, etc. Then we also talked about the risk part. We talked about the different stages of the risk management process. We mentioned that this is a process, so it never ends. We should never claim that we are already aware of everything that's going on, and so we don't have to do any reassessments or something like that. With every new event, with any thing that is a potential threat to our assets as an organization, we should have a proper risk management process applied. And everything starts from the risk identification. And then once we have identified all the assets and all the vulnerabilities and all the threats, then we go on with the risk assessment, where we, and this is the part that's used here, where we can, where the goal is to create a method to assess the relative value of risk for each vulnerability that was already identified in the first part. And then we have the risk control part, where we try to make the best decision based on the values that we have from the risk assessment phase. And besides that, we also talked about terms like risk appetite, which is also known as risk tolerance, which is like what is the level of risk that any organization is able to accept. And that if in such case that if this risk is evaluated and assessed that the company is having this current value of risk, then it's okay, so they shouldn't do anything about it. And then the residual risk is what value of the risk assessment part remains after the company has installed all the potential software, has implemented all the necessary mechanisms in order to improve their level of security, and then whatever is left after this, this is like a residual risk. And as was mentioned in the lecture, and also maybe in the test, maybe, there should be a relationship between the residual risk and the risk appetite, which is like the residual risk should be at least or least or equal to the risk appetite level in order for the company to be secure. And then we also mentioned the cost-benefit analysis, and it was especially mentioned when we had that exercises part. And I think, when it comes to this part, you would have some questions about the different risk processes or stages, and then you might also have an exercise like the ones that we already covered. And then there is a Word document that is like trying to also summarize the main knowledge from this part. So I might also share it with you. It's in Norwegian. So you might also read it if you need to have more information, like concrete information. It might be good to have it in Norwegian as well. So we already talked about this. And so in the risk assessment, we should distinguish between the loss frequency and the loss magnitude terms. So, and also how can they be calculated and how can they affect the final risk value. Then we had two more topics that were not covered in class, but I guess, and actually also I hope, but I think it's okay that you have these materials. There are some recordings and some videos related to them. So, for example, for the ethical part, I have already created a folder which has different videos and also the case studies related to this. You have even a book which hasn't been published yet, but will be published, I guess, in December. So if you would like to have more information on the ethical part, you have, I think you have mostly everything there. And what you will be asked in the exam, and what should be good for you to understand, would be what are the different theories or, let's say, principles when it comes to cybersecurity and ethics. And it's like four main theories, which is like human rights, utilitarianism, contractualism, and principalism. And in those, if you see those videos, you will be able to understand the differences between them and how can they be applied into a real case, right? You even have a case study. And and then when it comes to legal issues, I didn't want to make it too detailed, so I just chose one short lecture from the same course that the other videos were chosen. And it's about the relationship between EU values and strategies and cybersecurity. So it's somehow legal, not too legal, let's say. It doesn't cover like laws or whatever, but I think it should be okay for this part, for this course. And then when it comes to the human aspects, there was this lecture on the identity management and authentication. You already have the recording of the lecture and the slides. And the main parts that you could follow from that are the ones trying to identify what do we mean by identity, what do we mean by authentication, what do we mean by biometrics, and maybe something else. And this will also be, I mean, the main part that should be related to this topic. And we also did some exercises in class just to understand more about how can we create a good password, and then what could be some other options. Then we also had some additional resources that you can use. So you can also go through the Cisco Academy course. It is like highly related to the materials, to the topics that were covered so far. So whenever you want to have maybe more information on something especially covered in the first lectures for this cybersecurity part, you can also read the Cisco materials. And then there are also two more guest lectures, which actually were more related to the other course, but still, since they were talking about cybersecurity topics and they were talking about the same topics that we are covering here, I will maybe upload a folder with these lectures, and then you're free to go through them and listen to them whenever you have some time. And but that does not mean that you have to do this because you have the exam, right? This is just for your own benefit, and this is just because we have had this structure, this program, and these are part of the topics, especially, for example, the future development. I wasn't able to prepare something, but I think if you can read or if you can listen to the lecture from John Mann, could maybe have a general idea about what could happen in the future, especially as related to the usage of artificial intelligence and the emerging, the other emerging technologies that are somehow already part of our present, but that will be, that will take a bigger part in the future. And I would say that this is what I prepared. Of course, there might be something that I skipped on this summary because, But then you already have all the materials you need. And I will also upload this into Blackboard. And also the guest lectures, as I mentioned. Yeah. And then about the exam, I'm not sure if you already saw the cybersecurity part of the exam. Okay. And then, as Eric mentioned, you will receive the solutions part of the questions in the following days. So, yeah. In the meantime, you are free to contact us or just drop by the office and just if you have some questions. And yeah, you can maybe also send us an email, or I think there's also something that it's already created in Blackboard, something like inviting you to ask questions or something, so you can also use that if you want. And well, I already had a meeting yesterday with the reference group, and I mentioned to them in the beginning that there was this final assignment, and it was due to be submitted last Thursday. And I can maybe I can again check now, but it seems that three of the groups have not yet submitted the final assignment. And then I checked in more details and saw that maybe this was because most of the members have already done a good job in the tests. I'm not sure. But anyway, if there is still something that you need to submit, please do it today, because then you know that this is the last week, so there's not too much left to before the exam session, and then we need to have a good understanding of your individual results. So then, if any of the groups is here, group 1, 2, and 4, or maybe any member, try to submit something which could be the final version of the first assignment, because even so, I mean, if you want me to consider that, that's not like final, because, for example, one of the groups have had only a screenshot there, which should not be a final assignment, right? And then the other groups were like also lacking of some format or something, so there should be something more about that. So, yeah. Anything else that you would like to discuss? So, as related to the exam, you will see that it covers, of course, both networks and cybersecurity, and it has multiple choice questions and open questions for both parts. And I would say that we try to create a sample exam which could be very similar to the final exam. So you should expect a similar structure in the final exam, right? You will have multiple choice questions and then open questions. You will have an exam that will go up to 3 hours, so you should expect something that you should be able to deliver in that time. And then everything will be done on Espera. Yes?
Is the exam in English?
Yeah, I was just thinking actually about this when you raised your hand. I mean, at least from the discussion that I had in my other course, I haven't been able to do this like with Eric in specific, but I think it should be, it will be available in English. And then the question would be if any of you has like issues with English in that level that you would need something in Norwegian as well. I'm not sure about that, but as you already saw, most of the materials, or maybe all the materials, are in English. So I think that the test will be in English, the exam. And I think that Inspire also allows it to have it like bilingual or whatever. But I'm just asking if you have any issues with the problem, with the exam being in English, and then that's it. Yeah?
Are we allowed to have any materials with us? Well, for example, like in programming, we can have this everything that's written down or printed out, we can have with us. But in math, it's only.
I don't think so. So you can also check the course page. It doesn't. You are not allowed to have something, except of maybe calculator. I'm not sure. Anything else? So you're asking that it's the first time for you to take the exam here, and I would answer that my first answer would be that it's the first time that I'm giving the exam to the students here. So, but anyway, I mean, I would say that you have to have 60% of the full. Yeah, points in order to pass this class. Yeah, it should be like that.
Taken as
not, yeah, okay.
Sometimes the commands can get really long, so if we just write down as correctly as we know how.
Okay, I would say that if you had on average answered to all the questions that are similar to that one, like covering, like again, coding and stuff, in that level, and you answered most of them or like all of them correct, then if you would have some like typing error or like some anything that would like, you would not be able to remember the full command or the correct command, but you would still be able to maybe argue about it or like, you know, like reason about it in that way that, you know, we will use this because this is like doing this and this and this, then it seems like you know it, but you just, this is just like something that happened, right? So you just forgot something about it or whatever. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think it should be taken as correct.
Remember lots of command lines when you usually have, like, you can, when you do it by yourself,
yeah.
You usually are able to, you know, use a library or something to check it up, but when you do it in the exam, you, like, have to remember everything yourself. So, like, I don't remember this line correctly, but, like, just a little part of the line, like, you know, just say, that you use that part to do this thing. So you can, like, like if you don't remember how to do ano, isn't that the thing you when you?
Yeah, okay, it's okay. I understand. I think I gave you an answer that should be okay, right?
Okay.
So I mean, you are free to make, let's say, or to forget something, but of course not everything. So yeah, I think that should be the case. I mean, if you have already, I mean, because you don't have this single question there, you have a list of like 10 or 15 other questions, right?
Yeah.
So if all of the questions that were related to coding or something like that, you answered them correctly, it means that you know the stuff, but that's just something that happened.
Okay.
And then I'm not sure actually how this is dealt from Inspera. I'm not sure what Eric mentioned before about this, but I think, yeah. Yeah?
Why is there a 60% pass rate for, like, to get an E on another subject when it's only 40%?
Okay. I'm not sure about this, but I will check again maybe. I thought it would be like 60%, but if there's anything else, I mean, you can also check the course page and see it. It automatically connects to the grades. The grades are like standard for all the courses. So if the grades are such that you start from 40%, then you will start from 40%. Okay, I'm not inventing anything new. I thought it was like from 60. I can also maybe check it now if you want. So about the exam, it says ingentrikte eller håndskrevne hjelpemidler tillatt, bestemt enkel kalkulator tillatt. Okay? About the exam. Because I had it in my phone and it's like easier maybe to do this. There should be also something about the Würdering.
this one?
Yes, because I couldn't see that. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we got. The math teacher told us that they follow this as a.
I think the math teacher has
friend.
This. Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. So if the math teacher said that you have to have 40%, then I think it's okay for us to have 40%. So yeah, I wasn't able to find the link, but your friend here helped me. Yeah, I think it's 40%, but then if there's anything else, I can also maybe announce something or just let you know in the next few days. I think that's it, because I wasn't able to find it to locate it in Tunisia. Anything else? Yeah? So, as far as I know, you should, and as far as I'm responsible, and my suggestion would be to just have plus points when it comes to correct options and nothing when it comes to incorrect options. But then again, if there's a regulation or something that we should follow this thing, I should still work on it, maybe. But as far as I know, we should not have negative points. I'm not sure if you have this from anywhere. Okay.
We don't have a map, at least. Operational negative, I mean, it's by map, that is the fact.
So you just add. Everything is just added, like, you cannot go below, you can just go up. This is my view at least. Something else? Or? So you have the first exam like next week? What is it?
Yeah, Tuesday. And then Tuesday following that.
By the way, is are there is Alexander Melby here, or maybe Casper? You're Casper.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when before I go, we can maybe talk a bit. Do you have any more questions? Should I end this?